want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to episode 177 of the Geocaching Podcast, recorded live on November 6th, 2010. I'm your host, XPunkX, with
Daryl W4 and
Monty Ryder.
If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444. Our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with other listeners, and that can be found at geocachingpodcast.com/live. Click the Join Now button to participate. We have a voicemail line, 206-350-3GPS, and we'd love to hear from our listeners, so go ahead and give us a call. This episode is brought to you by CachingContainers.com. Make sure you head over to CachingContainers to check out all of their cool and unique containers. Caching Containers also has done something cool just for listening to this podcast. If you enter the discount code NOVPODCAST, they will give you 10% off your entire order, including shipping. So check out CachingContainers.com today. Welcome back, guys. It's been quite a week here. Montu, how have you been?
Oh, it's definitely been quite a week here. Saturday night, we finished up with the haunted train rides, including one incident where a conductor got thrown off the train. Unfortunately, that conductor was me. Somebody fired off their camera right in my face, and I didn't see a turn coming, and train went one way. I went the other.
That's not good.
Thankfully, we were only going about 5 miles an hour, and I fell off into a nice bit of sugar sand, which, since Daryl's been down here, he knows what that's like. Nice and soft.
Yeah, not so fun to walk in, but probably pretty nice to land in.
Yes, definitely. When I got up and realized what had happened, came to my senses, train was already gone around the bend, so I wound up having to walk back. But other than that, after we got home from that, found the corner seam in the waterbed had burst, so spent the next couple of days draining that using a very small shop vac to drain a king-size waterbed, which takes a little bit of time. But on a better note, our annual event here at Starkey Park Cache has been published. GC2HJN8, the fifth annual Starkey Park Geo event. It's going to be held December 26th. And come and join us if you're going to be in Florida for the holidays.
Yeah, I'd love to, but not this year, unfortunately.
Yeah, we already baked you once.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I won't be able to make it down there either. Now, Daryl, how have you been?
Oh, not too bad. It was a week pretty much free of caching. It's been all about the podcast production, and you know, we talked last week about recording Caches of the Roundtable, and you know, getting that put together, cleaned up, you know, put together, and that's ready to go out in the feed. And dealing with some hosting problems, the Libsyn, the hosting service that we use for both of the, for all three of the podcasts, because we kind of use that for hosting the files here. It's switched over their server software and created some nasty problems for us. Ooh, now, Andy, good. I understand that you're actually working on putting together a webinar for people to learn more about something for caching.
That is true. I decided to go ahead and do a GSAC webinar. So the Geocaching Swiss Army Knife is a pretty cool software if you've ever used it or, if you've looked at it, even, you know, it's pretty, there's a lot that goes into it. So I decided to do a webinar, and that is going to be December 4th. And that all the information can be found at geocachingpodcast.com/GSAC webinar, GSAKWEBINAR. That's really all that I've been doing is mainly my job and trying to get that around and going. And it's going to be my first actual webinar. You know, I've done this type of a training tutorials before, but never as a webinar. So it'll be interesting as a webinar. I'm excited, and hopefully y'all can check that out.
Now, that's actually more for like the moderate users, people who know how to get in and launch the app already, I assume.
Yeah, we're gonna start with a little bit of the basics as far as configuring it and things like that, and getting your GPX in there. But also, if you are an attendee, you have a chance to put in some topics for me to talk about also. So we're gonna range from anything from basic to a little bit more moderate. So if that's something that's interesting to you, head over to geocachingpodcast.com/GSAC webinar.
Oh, sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how it's gonna go. Again, like I said, this is my first webinar, so I'm really excited.
Geocaching question of the day. The bad cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is the bad cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. Fellow cacher Digital MDX asks, have you ever been the last to find a cache before it went missing? 77% of the geocachers that replied said yes, they had been the last to find a cache before it went missing. The last time this happened to me, the cache was just opposite of Groundspeak headquarters, in a tree marked for removal. In fact, the cache owner contacted me and said I was the last to log it before the tree got cut down. So tell me, have you ever been the last to find a cache before it went missing? You want to find out all this and more? Come to my website, cachingnw.com, and follow me, the bad cop, on Twitter.
Listener feedback.
Mike from Team Emla wrote in on last week's show saying, I thought I'd share my process for getting to the cache on significant cache runs with you. First, after targeting the general area, I start by building a bookmark list on geocaching.com of the caches I want to visit in the order that I want to visit them. I use the Google Maps on geocaching.com to identify the caches and scroll around to pick the optimal route. Since bookmark lists alphabetize by default, I prepare the cache name in the bookmark list with numbers representing their order like so. 001, name of cache, 1. 002, the name of the second cache. 003, the name of the third cache, and so on. Once the bookmark list is complete, I print a copy so that I can reference the order in route and have a place to make notes for logging finds later. I take this printed copy with me on a clipboard. Other than those sheets and occasionally some needed by a puzzle cache, I'm paperless. Next step is to create a pocket query from the bookmark list. When the GPX is delivered, I load it on my iPhone into both Groundspeak's geocaching app and in Geosphere. I also load it into my Garmin Venture HC as a backup, though my iPhone is my primary caching device. Finally, to make cache-to-cache navigation easy, I load the Pocket Query GPX into RouteBuddy on my MacBook Pro. In RouteBuddy, I have complete offline roadmaps for North America and topographical maps for Michigan. The laptop sits in my passenger seat with a US GlobalSat BU-353 connected to it. I usually put the BU-353 onto my car roof as it has a magnet to hold it in place. Using RouteBuddy in this manner allows me to see a much broader area at a glance and, when necessary, zoom in to get detailed info. I keep my iPhone plugged in and charging as much as possible, but have two battery backups for it just in case. To keep my laptop running all day, I plug it into a power inverter. The added bonus to maintaining a fully charged laptop is that if I'm camping someplace without electricity, I'll connect my iPhone to my laptop overnight. This charges the iPhone battery so that it's topped off for the next day.
Now, Andy, that's some stuff that we've kind of all done, but I know one of the things you and I both like to do is actually put that list together in Evernote so that we have it printable and we can have it right on our smartphones and check them off right there.
That is true. And we've talked so much about Evernote here on this podcast. It's a great tool because it allows you to put lots and lots and lots of text in. You can access it from anywhere. You can do the web, your smartphone, things like that. And it's all searchable and it's great because, like you said, it's available anytime, and it's great for taking notes, especially like on Earth caches too.
Oh, definitely. And that's one of the reasons I like doing that is it's all right there. I can copy and paste the information. And when I'm going and prepping the cache runs like that, I'll usually do a hyperlink to the GC number, and I include the GC number so that I can look it up too. But just the nice quick hyperlink, and then, you know, open it up on the iPhone and check out any information I might have forgotten. So I pretty much stay strictly paperless, except on some of the bigger, longer routes. I do like to still keep a printout with me for that, because it's just so much easier to have, you know, a nice big sheet of paper that's sitting, you know, in the center console or whatever that you can just kind of pick up and check off that way.
Well, that, and that's kind of nice too, because you can scratch, you know, like if you write chicken scratch down on it and delete it and, you know, scribble it out if you need to. And like you said, on those big long things.
Oh, yeah. Well, the other one that I've also done for some of the longer distance drives when we're doing things like, you know, we want to hit counties or, you know, we're looking to clear out all of the virtual caches on like one side of the state is I'll also use a Google spreadsheet, which again, I can edit from the web browser on the smartphone and actually go and put those in order there with the drive time between and the estimated time so that we can kind of keep an eye on whether or not we're going to have to cut out caches to make it back toward the end of the day or something. So that's a, you know, kind of a, you know, really involved planning method, but we find that works really well for those long, you know, 10, 12 hour trips where you have to make it back by a certain time.
Well, and I've been with you when you've done the spreadsheets thing, and it's great for also group planning, you know, because I was able to, you know, we don't live real close at all by any means, and we were meeting somewhere in the middle, and I got your spreadsheet with Google Docs because you shared it with me, and then we went ahead and I could see all that information that you had planned out, and it worked really great.
Yeah, and when we did that, when they didn't have the smartphone browsers really supported all that well yet, but now they've come a long way, and, you know, all I have to do is punch in the time that we've completed a cache and it will update the rest of the spreadsheet. So, you know, we did pretty well when we went out in Toledo, which is, you know, when we first used that technique. And, you know, if we had run behind because we ran into that one cache that was taking a little longer than we expected, you know, at least then we'd know, you know, well, you know, Andy, at this point, we're going to be getting back at closer to 9 o'clock than 7 o'clock. So maybe we should cut out these last few caches.
Or just call the people that are waiting for us and tell them we're going to be late because we're still trying to find caches.
Yeah, if you have that option, because sometimes that's a hard out that you can't edit.
True.
You know, like when the light goes out and you can't be in a park anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, like a few different options that really make it easy. And maybe we should look at talking about that. But some of that stuff's really hard to discuss. You really have to kind of visualize it.
Yeah. No, that's a really good feedback. And we want to thank the team Mamilia for putting that in. And if you guys have any feedback, that's a good reminder. Give us a call, 206-350-3GPS, or go ahead and shoot an email to feedback@geocachingpodcast.com. Now, tonight we are going to be talking, it's our Cacher Coffee. So if you've never joined us for one of our Cacher Coffees, it's, again, kind of an open mic. I'm going to go ahead here in a few seconds to unmute everybody who's on the phone line. Unless you've got a dirty line, it's not very clean, then I'll mute you again. But it's going to be open. Everybody can kind of just talk and put in their 2 cents. And it's kind of like you were talking to each other just in a coffee shop as a good event. So with that being said, now we've had some requests to talk a little bit about family or group IDs on geocaching.com. And that being said, like, do you have like one, a group for your family? Like, do you have the layman family ID? And then I would also have my Xpunk X ID or things like that. Daryl, I know that you guys at one time had separate accounts for you and Dree, and now you guys are together. What are your thoughts on the group IDs? Or even like, do you guys for your Motor City cash machine, do you guys have a group ID?
Yeah, we actually do have a group ID for a Motor City cash machine, but we don't log under the Motor City cash machine. That's for when we host events or something like that, so that we can list it through that as, you know, the group is hosting the event, not an individual. And we have the same thing for Cachemaniacs because we did the launch event for Cachemaniacs that we didn't want to put it under our account, so we put it under that account. But, you know, we never log anything under those accounts. It's mm-hmm. just there as something to host or place a cache. You know, and this is one of the reasons why I do have some issues with the, you know, zero cache limit, you know, or the 10 cache limit for placing a new cache, is you have these group accounts where all they are doing is hosting, like, the mega events. Almost every mega event every mega event that I've actually looked at, and I assume it's just most, it's hosted by a group name that doesn't have any other hides or any other finds. It's just that event, you know, because they don't want to have any squabbling or bickering over who gets to host the mega.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I think that, like you said, that goes back into the not having having a limit on the amount that you place or found versus when you place them. Because again, you can't do that for groups, and then you get into that sticky situation where you'd have to have some, like, a group apply for an account so you could do the hosting. And it, I think, would just get really frustrating, especially on Groundspeak's part, as far as to having to regulate that, as far as who has to have a certain amount of caches found before they can place a cache.
Yeah, there's certainly ways around that in, you know, setting up some different classifications or something, but yeah, I don't think it's a problem. And, you know, why go through all that extra effort when there's so much other stuff that you can do? But really, I think what the people have been interested in finding out our opinion on is when you have people who are logging under a team account for the family or group or whatever versus just logging individually. And I really don't see a reason that you'd have both, but I do see where some of the kids have gone out and gotten their own accounts, you know, because they're not always caching with their parents. Their parents end up doing all the caching under, like, the family account. Then the kids have their own. That way, when they go off to school or, you know, whatever, they have their own account, and that way it's theirs and they don't have to all share the same account. You know, and when you have kids that, you know, go off on their own, you all don't want to be sharing the same accounts. So, you know, separate accounts for that kind of stuff does make sense.
We kind of started off the same way. We started off using just the one handle, Baker Geckos, for the entire family. As my kids grew up, they got their own accounts and started their own. So we started off as a family of four, and now we're just me and the wife doing for one. But I also have a group name called South Dakota Cachers, which we post events and caches on. Right now it says zero, but we have a huge cube in place. But we're trying to do a couple of things out here as well. So,
well, and I think that's the same thing for us. We've got, I don't want to say we don't have necessarily a group account. Me and my wife share an account that we log together under. And then we also have separate accounts for our kids. And the reason we did that is just for the simple fact of kind of keeping track of their stats separately. And so they can see later on what they found and what they haven't found. And, you know, like you said, when they get to grow up, they don't want to have to break off and try and figure out from us which ones they were with us with and which ones they weren't. So we decided right away, especially just go ahead and create an account for them right away.
Yeah, we had kind of similar kind of concerns when we merged our accounts from separate accounts. We didn't want to have to keep track of the individual caches and everything else. You know, Dree didn't really like logging. It was just kind of a pain. You know, there was some kind of, you know, mock jealousy kind of stuff happening too, and you got out of sync, or when someone was able to go caching and the other person couldn't. And, you know, it really just made it a lot easier all the way around for us to just merge our accounts. So, you know, it certainly does make sense for, you know, especially like couples to have one account. But when you talk about the kids, you know, it's really nice for them to have their own account as long as they don't get and jealous that mom and dad have 20 extra caches or something like that.
Yeah, and at this point we don't, and who knows? I mean, when the kids grow up a little bit more, maybe they will have go out and get more than us. We're quite a bit more ahead than they are, you know, because we cached quite a bit before that they were born, and then also we've done cache runs that they weren't on, and so that we've got quite a bit more caches than they have. So I don't think that they're actually going to outnumber us, but, you know, they may, you know, at some point when they actually have more time to cache than we do, they may actually get out there and outnumber us.
Yeah, and I think a lot of what it comes down to for most people is just the numbers, you know, whether it's the numbers for the stats or, numbers for, essentially if you have a group of like, and we'll think of like maybe like an extended family where you have the grandparents, the kids, the parents, all that kind of stuff. If you're going for something like a fizzy challenge and you use that to qualify, well, that's kind of not really fair because you might not have actually done all of those different terrain and difficulty ratings. You might be, mooching off someone else who did. So I can kind of see some of the concerns there, but otherwise, it's caching, do what you want to do. And as long as it's not hurting anyone else, just let it go.
Now, we did have some interesting point brought up in the chat room. AC Fever says, why couldn't a kid's account be linked to the parent's account so that when a parent logs a find, it also logs the kid's account too at the same time? That would actually be a good idea. I think that as long as you could selectively kind of like log at the same time, would be a great idea, because I know that for me, it takes a long time because I have to gotta log 4 different accounts for the most time when all of my kids are with me. I've got 4 different accounts that I log, and that's why I end up using some sort of a program that uses the geocaching log text, the field notes, so that way I can just go ahead and upload that and then change it when I log in and load them all at once. I can change the text just a little bit to kind of go after their how they were from their perspective, I guess. When I log them, I'm the one doing the logging. So for me, I kind of say things like, had a fun time with mom and dad. This one was easy. We love playing in the park, things like that. Whereas, a 4 and 5 year old would have maybe said it.
Yeah. Now this is, linking the accounts would obviously take some programming on the geocaching.com site, but this is where that geocache.txt file or whatever the device creates, the name for the file, but that's where that actual file comes in handy, and where things like the geocaching app, the official one, don't work so well, because the official geocaching app and the Trimble Geocache Navigator takes the API and just posts direct from the API. It doesn't create that file, and in order to cross-post those field notes, you have to have the file that you can upload to both of the accounts.
Yeah, and that's why I think that it's great to use some or sort of a third-party program that you can kind of create those things.
Yeah, and as I understand it right now, Groundspeak really doesn't have a whole lot that they're working on with this kind of stuff. They have higher priority requests and issues to deal with right now. So, we really have to kind of work with what they have right now and just assume that that's the way it's going to be for the foreseeable future. Maybe way down the road they'll do something, but I think really what you're going to end up with is, for the next couple of years, there's not going to be a whole lot of changes in the way the accounts work. It's really designed more as an individual thing, so you have to work around that. And those text files work great. I use Geosphere all the time, and one of the great things after we've done some group caching is I can go and just write from the phone, hit email, copy everyone on that list so everyone has the same set of field notes. And before they even get home, it's waiting in their email.
Exactly. I do the same thing. Now, again, tonight is the Geocacher Coffee. So if you have any feedback that you want to, or topics that you want to talk about tonight, give us a call, 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. Now, you did mention other priorities and things. I noticed in the email that went out from Groundspeak this week that they are started with the, and again, we're bringing back up the whole idea of waymarking, but they brought up the idea of scavenger hunts on waymarking. Now, it's something that they just came out with, I guess. I haven't not had any chance to look at this because I did just see this today in my email. I haven't really had a chance to go and check it out. Daryl, I know that you don't really like waymarking, and it's kind of on the back burner for most of us geocachers, but have you got a chance to check it out?
No, I haven't had a chance to look at that at all, and I don't even get the emails anymore because that all goes to Dree. One of the hazards of the group account is all your notifications go to one place, really. I'm not sure I'd really get into that. I'm more interested in the Where I Go stuff, especially because it looks like there's more interest in that starting to pick up with the release of the iPhone app.
Yeah, I'm interesting to see how what they've done with this. I know it's kind of like, I think you can kind of create like a quick random group of things that you need to go find and take and meet, go to, you know, certain waymarks. To me, it's just, I don't know, a random thing they probably shouldn't have done, but oh well, you know, they did it. So that's, I guess, on them. If anyone has had any experience with the scavenger hunt, make sure to give us a call tonight, 724-444-7444, and our Toddcast ID is 7525, or you can give us a call 206-350-3GPS and leave us a voicemail. Now, Daryl, we interviewed the Travel Bugs group a few weeks ago, and so I want to, we had this contest going that you, if you called in some feedback and left us some feedback about it, you'd be entered into a drawing to win the CD. So I want to go ahead and give that away. First, before we do that, though, let's go ahead and listen to the calls that we had come in. Unfortunately, this is a really small group of people that sent in some feedback. It was only two people. So if you sent in feedback, you have a really good chance of winning the CD. So let's go ahead and listen to those.
Hey guys, this is Dan from the geocaching team of Dan and Steph. I wanted to share a little story about a travel bug that I have. It's actually called the Geocaching Podcast travel bug, and I released it here in South Korea after carrying it around with me for about a year, dipping it into the geocaches. I finally decided to release it at an event in Daegu, South Korea, at an annual event, and it's passed through a couple hands and traveled from South Korea, then it went to Germany for a little while, and then it went to Denmark. And the funny thing is, I noticed that one time it landed in a geocache belonging to somebody on Twitter that I've talked to numerous times. I'm not quite sure how to say his name. I think it's Nina Sager. I'm not sure because I don't speak Danish. But it's passed through his cache, and he ran out to try and grab it, but by the time he got to it, somebody else had, another geocacher had already grabbed it and started moving it on. But it's kind of strange. You know, it's a small world. And then when you get the intersecting worlds of Twitter and geocaching crossing through, it's, you know, it's really interesting to see how the internet has made the world a smaller place. But I just want to share with you, and I'll email the travel bug number and the geocache number for that geocache in Denmark belonging to our buddy. Just to add to the show notes. I can't remember right off the top of my head. Anyways, just want to share that with you, and I guess enter it into the geocaching or the travel bug geocaching story contest. Anyways, talk to you later, guys. Love the show. Keep on geocaching.
Yes, this is Cajun Seeker. I have an interesting travel bug story. This one involves a geo coin, actually my first geo coin that me and my family found. It was in South Louisiana. It was a diabetes awareness coin. And what makes it so interesting is that the place it was found before it ended up in sulfur was under the ocean in the Bahamas. Okay, so it that's just my first and only travel bug story. So thank you very much.
All right, so now it's going to be time to give away the Travel Bugs CD, and I'm using random.org, and I'm going to create a random number between 1 and 2, and so let's go ahead here and do that. All right, that's going to be Cajun Seekers. Cajun Seekers, you've got 2 weeks to send us an email with your address so we can get that CD out to you. Again, congratulations, Cajun Seekers. Now, Daryl,
well, you know, with only the two people, you probably could have just flipped a coin.
That's true. But, you know, I decided to be a little bit more technical. Well, I guess. And use random.org. The coin, I figured, knowing my luck, I'd probably flip it and then land on the other side of the studio or something. So I decided to go ahead and use the web.
Hey, at least I would have added a little bit of interest.
True. True. Well, again, congratulations and thanks both of you for putting in that feedback. Now, Daryl, we had some really good chat last week after the show. Do you want to bring that up a little bit here and talk about what we were kind of talking about last week?
Oh, we talked about a few things, but I'm assuming you're kind of talking about the differences between geocaching with Geosphere and the official geocaching iPhone app from Groundspeak. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, and each of those has some different kind of uses, and everyone kind of debates what the ideal uses are for each of those. But the thing with the official geocaching app that makes it so handy is that you don't have to, you know, assuming you're using it on an iPhone, you don't have to preload your caches. It's just a pick up and go. It's great for that. I have a few hours here that I didn't expect. I'm going to go do some caching, or the, first to find, so that you don't have to preload. Whereas the apps like geocaching with Geosphere really do better at the large number of caches, because you can go through and, you know, filter with a GSAC or whatever and load them in. You don't have to worry about your data connection, because it can be completely offline. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that geocaching with Geosphere also allows you to create that text file for the field notes that you can email to a group of people. And you don't have that option at all with the geocaching iPhone app.
Yeah, and that's actually why I switched using from the official app to the Geosphere, is because being offline with just the iPod Touch, is I didn't like the fact that I could, when I tried to load up my, you know, the searches, the saved searches and saved pocket queries, it just took forever to search through the cache. And that may have changed now with newer versions, but it seems like, you know, I type in the GC number and it would just take up to 3 or 4 minutes just to search for the cache. And with the Geosphere, it was almost instant. And I really loved that. And so that was one of the main reasons why I switched.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good features in Geosphere. That you can do a lot of the same kind of on the road searching just through the web interface, but if you're really looking for that quick caching, the iPhone app is nice to have, and it's only $10 for the iPhone app from geocaching.com, and I believe $8 for the Geosphere app. If I have to recommend one app for someone, if they're looking for something to do just the paperless, I usually recommend the Geosphere. If they're looking for something for that, I don't want to have to rely on my GPS all the time, then I recommend the iPhone app. So, you know, the geocaching iPhone app. And, you know, the other thing to remember is that the geocaching iPhone app is also available for Android, whereas Geosphere is not. You'd have to go for something like CGeo. And with CGeo, I haven't actually had a chance to use that one yet. Everyone that I've talked to who uses it just absolutely adores it. However, they do some web scraping, which is illegal in the terms of service with geocaching.com. And if you get caught with any of that web scraping, you've got a problem where they can, you know, shut you down and lock you out.
Yeah, and then that's one of the things that, you know, I know that we had talked about the differences between scraping last night, what's scraping and what's not. And those of us who do use the Geocaching Swiss Army Knife, there was a plugin or a macro that did some scraping, and a lot of users found their accounts locked out and didn't even realize what they were doing. And luckily, Groundspeak was nice enough, I guess you could say, to unlock their accounts, since they really didn't realize what they were doing.
Yeah, that, you know, as the end user, you don't necessarily know how these guys are actually getting in and getting their information. So it can be a little bit frustrating, but CGO has had some issues from what I've heard. I don't actually know anyone who's run into those, but I've heard of people who have run into issues with using that from, you know, Groundspeak. The way that the Geosphere app works is you're actually loading in the GPX files or manually browsing. So that's not technically web scraping, because it's you're sitting there doing it. So when they start doing automated things with that, that's when you start getting into problems. Yeah, the official geocaching iPhone app and the Trimble Geocache Navigator are both using that API, which doesn't get into the web scraping, because it's going direct through a backdoor that, you know, you can actually license, from what I understand, but it's not terribly cost effective. So, you know, these smaller guys like CGeo and Geosphere really can't afford to do that.
No, and that's, so, you know, as far as I know, only the official apps and the Trimble apps are, the Trimble app is the one that's actually using the API. So in reality, it's probably not very cost effective at all.
No, though I believe that the DeLorme cash register and also the Geosphere, or not Geosphere, what is it? The GeoMate Junior. I believe their software also uses it, but not in quite the same way.
Oh, yeah, I guess that would be true. Now, if anyone else has any topics that they'd like us to talk about tonight, give us a call, 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525, or go ahead and just type in the chat room if you're in our chat room tonight as far as what you would like us to talk about tonight. Daryl, I know that there's a lot going on here. I know that we had talked about doing another meetup type of a thing here shortly, but we haven't really made any plans. We're looking for somewhere between Michigan and Indiana, kind of somewhere halfway between Detroit and Indiana to do that. But anything else new on your front?
Well, you know, I've kind of been thinking a lot about the Where I Go stuff because we talked with the creator of the PyGo app, and you know, we've been doing the Cachers of the Roundtable that's going to be on Where I Go that gets released actually in a few hours. And I'm just kind of thinking more and more about doing some development, just haven't had a chance to sit down and do it. But, you know, I'm really looking forward to playing with some audio now that the iPhone app is out and actually supports the audio.
Yeah, and I know that I'm really waiting. I need to upgrade my wife's iOS to the newest version so that I can take advantage of that newest version of PyGo. But unfortunately, since it does take so long to download here on my connection, I never think about it unless it's right before bed and, you know, she wants to use her phone for the alarm clock. So I've got to wait.
Well, there are some ways to get around that, actually, with the iPhone. When you plug it in, you just click the download only. And then you can disconnect the phone and walk away.
Oh, that works.
Yeah, so that way it will just download, and next time you connect, you have the option to actually install.
Well, Daryl and Montu and guys that are here live with us, it looks like, well, we do have one more thing in here. Any recommendations, Daryl, for a rechargeable batteries for Civil War Buffs GPS? I know that the rechargeable batteries are quite a big topic, and we've talked about it once or twice on the show here, but any recommendations for rechargeable batteries?
Yeah, you know, it depends a lot on, you know, I'm assuming since he's asking that he's using the AA batteries, but it does depend a lot on what you're looking for as far as price range. But in general, the ones that seem to be most popular right now are the Eneloop batteries from Sanyo. You can get some really good deals on those. My preference has actually been on kind of running around and getting bits and pieces. So I'll get the charger from Maha, and then the or Power Max, I think, is the brand that they're actually selling those under. It's a little bit better, more expensive charger that doesn't charge necessarily any faster, but it does have some, you know, better circuitry in there, so you can do things like recondition the batteries and make sure the batteries are you know, just kind of treated better than most of those cheap chargers do. And then I like the hybrid batteries from EverReady. Maybe it is EverReady. And all of that stuff, except for those chargers that I mentioned, the PowerMax chargers, are available on the shelf from box stores. So, you know, you can find some awesome deals on the Eneloops, a great way to get started. But what you're looking for are the batteries that usually say that they're pre-charged, because those are the ones that will allow you to put them on the shelf for a few weeks without them dying. You know, if you get the standard NIM batteries, the standard straight NIMs just completely die out after about 2-3 weeks, I think it is. And the low discharge NIMs, which are what those pre-charged are, will last you on the shelf for easily a year, only losing about 20% of their charge. So a lot better if you're looking for, you know, not the charge right before you go kind of situation.
All right, well, I think that we're going to go ahead and close our show tonight. If you guys have any feedback about this show, go ahead and give us a call, 206-3503-GPS, and leave us a voicemail. We want to thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. We would like to thank CachingContainers.com for making this episode financially possible. Join us each Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444. Our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.com. You can call our voicemail line, and that number is 206-3503-GPS anytime to leave us a voicemail. Have a safe week and happy caching.